Yes, you can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you will find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, author and journalist Caroline Williams on introception and why you should never ignore your body's signals. Dr. Larissa Korda on bringing complementary practices into her medical qualifications to help with fertility on a physical, mental and spiritual way. And performance nutritionist Daniel Davey on how everyone has the ability to live the life of an athlete. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Another good week? I mean, look, Ronan Keating was right when he said life is a roller coaster and who knows when a white knuckle turn is coming. But I am good at the moment. I'm smiling. Sure, why wouldn't I be? I'm just back from a week in sunny Spain with my family. I would spend mornings before anyone else got up on the rooftop terrace of our little Airbnb writing my book, and then we'd all head off to get breakfast and chill out at the beach for the day. So, you know, this is good stuff. I know I've spoken about it on the show before, but because the first decade of us as parents having kids shot by, this one we're making sure that we are as present as possible and to take as many opportunities to connect as a family as we can. I do feel very lucky that we got to go away. You don't necessarily have to step into a different country or onto a plane to have that connection. But look, we had a great week and the sun added to it. It was also my birthday while we were there on Monday, so it was lovely to be somewhere very different and have a dip in the Mediterranean. So I am counting my blessings along with the years. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Caroline Williams is a writer dealing mainly with health, neuroscience and nature-based topics. A regular with the New Scientist magazine, she's also the author of two books, Move and Override. Her latest book, Inner Sense, explores the topic of introception, how our bodies tell our brains what we're feeling and how a greater understanding and harnessing of this can transform our health. And Caroline Williams joins me on the line now. Caroline, you're very welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Tell me what drew you to this topic.
Well, I've been a science journalist now for 25 years, and a lot of that time I've been fascinated by the mind and why we think the way we do, why we feel the way we do, and sort of all the glitches that come as part of being a human. And for a lot of that time, most of the science was about what goes on in the head, in the brain. And then I just noticed over the years that there started to be a bit of a change towards things that are happening in the body and how signals from within the body play into how we think, how we feel, and in fact are completely fundamental to how we think and how we feel. And interoception, as it turns out, is a massive thing in science that almost nobody knows about.
So can you explain it to us?
Yes. It's one of those words that sounds like it was made up by accountants or something. It doesn't do a very good job at getting across just how exciting and interesting it really is. So introception is a catch-all term that describes the way we perceive and interpret signals from inside the body. So that's everything from the heartbeat to whether you're hungry, whether you need to pee. And there are sort of three levels of these signals. There's the ones that you will never feel, so we essentially don't need to worry about them. Like you can never think, oh, I think I'll tune into my kidneys today and see how that's going. Then there are the ones that we can feel, like the heartbeat and how hungry we are and, you know, how full the bladder is, which are, you can tune in if you want to a certain extent, but they will let you know, they will let you know if there's something important that needs to be done or to be noticed. And then there's sort of the intermediate ones that are kind of what we think of as gut feelings and intuition and sort of these sort of spidey senses, where background feelings sort of are there all the time, play into how we think and feel without us really being able to put our finger on why. So, for example, whether we feel comfortable and confident, or whether we feel low on energy, or whether we feel ready to go, or whether we feel enthusiastic. So all of these are sort of based on sensations that arise in the body and their conversations back and forth with the brain.
And sometimes that idea of the gut-brain connection, even though it's getting a lot more coverage now, it can seem a little bit woo-woo, but I think anyone who's ever felt nervous or excited and been thinking that in their head and then felt butterflies in their tummy, we have felt that connection, but perhaps we didn't know that's what was going on.
Absolutely. And it's something that about, I would say, 10, 15 years ago, researchers started saying. So one of the key researchers in this area is Sarah Garfinkel at University College London. And she was working with people with PTSD who, you know, were having these sort of visceral reactions to situations. You know, she said, well, you can't ignore the fact, you know, that there's all this fear and anxiety and panic that's happening. But that comes along with a racing heart and you know, fast breathing and these kind of tension feelings. So you can't ignore this stuff. So she was one of the people that started looking into this and saying, well, how does the body play into what's happening in the mind?
And as you say, this area is getting a huge amount of research put into it now for perhaps the first time or a deeper level. So what are some of the latest developments?
Yeah, so most of the research that's been done that's had the most evidence so far has been done with anxiety and panic disorders because of this very strong link between what your heart is doing and how you're breathing and feeling anxiety. And so there's something very fundamental about a racing heartbeat that the brain can't immediately explain. And so, you know, if you run up the stairs, you're not going to feel anxious necessarily because you realize you just run up the stairs and your heart's risen. But if that happens and you're not really tuned into that signal, it can spiral anxiety. And so one of the interesting things about it is that Sarah Garfinkel, again, has done some studies, some training studies, where she's taken people with anxiety and trained them to pay more attention to their heart, to be better at perceiving what their heart is doing. And so that's simply raising the heartbeat, doing a little bit of exercise, and then with biofeedback, training them to be more accurate at sensing their heartbeat. And after a short period of training, people didn't qualify for anxiety disorder anymore. And after a year, they were still doing much better because they could put those signals more into context. But there's much more stuff going on. So people are starting to look at gut sensations now. So as part of my research for the book, I was able to swallow a vibrating capsule, like a battery-powered capsule, that sort of felt like you swallowed a tiny phone on but vibrate. And that's to work out how people are able or not able to tune into what's happening in the stomach. And that's relevant to everything from anxiety to feeling full. It's relevant for treating things like anorexia and binge eating disorder. And so looking at how those sensations in the stomach affect the brain is revealing some really interesting potential new treatments for those kinds of things. And also flotation therapy, in which, I don't know if you've ever done it, but you go into a very salty tank with a lid and it's dark and you don't feel anything because you're completely in zero gravity. The water is holding up your body and it's at body temperature. What that does is it kind of takes away all external sources of information. So all your brain can do is go inwards. And so that seems to enhance interoception in ways that seems to help people feel calmer, more in control, and to self-regulate based on their body signals a lot better.
I have done that. And I think I had built it up in my mind to be something that I would feel very claustrophobic within. So mm-hmm. because I had negative associations with it, when I arrived to it and saw that the dome was actually quite large and it was very easy to get out at any stage, it's sort of on a hinge, I didn't feel trapped and I really enjoyed it. So I think I was kind of pleasantly surprised throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And because usually in sort of flotation centres or, you know, spas where these tanks exist now, usually you're in a private room. So if you want to have the lid open, you can. If you want to leave the lights on, you can. And so you can kind of build up to the feeling of being enclosed. But to really get that sensation of sort of floating in space, you know, you can't feel your body. You can't feel the air around you because it's all kept at sort of body temperature. Being enclosed, I didn't find it claustrophobic at all. In fact, I'm very fidgety. I can't stay still. I'm not very good at just sort of being quiet for any period of time. But every time I've done it, when the music comes on at the end of the hour to say, okay, come back to the world now, I'm always like, oh, really? More? It's not boring and it's not claustrophobic. It's amazing. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I loved it. The place I went to actually here in Ireland has since closed down. I don't know if Ireland were ready. I hope we become more ready. But can we talk about when we stop listening to our innate intuitive systems and why? You delve a lot into something you've touched on there, eating to fullness. So our body will tell us we're full now, that's all we need. And yet we'll override it. And you delve into the area of ultra processed foods and how that has wreaked havoc on this system.
Yeah. So I think the way we eat now, a lot of the ultra processed foods, you know, they are, they tend to be lower in fiber, they are, you know, higher in sugar, they're easy to kind of just eat mindlessly. So one of the examples that I gave in the book is, do you imagine how easy it is to just eat a packet of crisps and then not really register that you've eaten that, versus if you were to eat a whole potato, you know, a baked potato. So there's roughly the same amount of potato in a bag of crisps as there is in a sort of medium-sized baked potato, but one you can whiz down quickly and not spoil your next meal, but if you ate a potato, you probably know about it. And so the signals that we have that says, okay, that's enough now, probably time to stop, get messed up by these kinds of foods. But there's also the fact of, if our attention is elsewhere when we're eating, you know, you don't notice your fullness because maybe you're watching something on the TV or scrolling on your phone or thinking about something that happened today. So I think the foods we eat and the way we eat are not helping us at all. So one thing that might be worth a try is sort of eating more whole foods, maybe just once a week. You know, I'm not saying everyone has to stop eating these lovely crisps and things, but taking a little bit of time to eat slowly and notice those fullness signals and get to know what they are. And then if you get to the point where you still want to eat, then notice what's driving that, because it might be, oh, do you know what, I fancy something sweet as a little treat, and that's fine. But, you know, trying to distinguish between these different sensations and what they mean, I think is really important if we want to sort of get back in touch with what we actually need.
Because when we keep overriding these systems, we not only cut off perhaps uncomfortable feelings, maybe stress, because you also touch on the way in which we live and feeling stress and trying to distract ourselves from that, whether it's through doom scrolling or other unhealthy behaviours. But when we start to do that and distract from the stress, we're also distracting from the pleasure and important messages that we need to receive. And I think that's what people forget.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and it's very tempting to just kind of think, oh, God, I'm a bit stressed, I'll just do some mindless scrolling. I'm as guilty of that as anybody. And it doesn't necessarily help. But also, if you can, you can feel the connection with other people. So the way we experience empathy and connections with other people, our bodies literally respond to somebody else's feelings. We sort of feel a version of what they're feeling in our own bodies. And if we're not connected into that, we're missing out on this this lovely aspect of life where we can connect to other people and understand them at a deeper level. And also that then has all kinds of effect in that when you have someone you feel safe and, you know, supported by, that affects how urgently your body signals things like anxiety and pain and confidence and all these sort of feelings that come from inside of you. If you have support and can empathize with other people, that benefits everybody. So yeah, I think there's lots of reasons why we wouldn't want to miss out on this information.
Yeah, and I think we can all see that's something that's very much missing in the modern world. Can you tell us as well about body mental health and the experiment you took part in Oklahoma?
So yeah, I mean, I had a great time in Oklahoma. I was invited for 3 days of a full immersion. So it involved flotation tank therapy. That's where I swallowed the vibrating pill to see my stomach. But one of the ones that was really quite surprising to me was one that looked at how the perception of breath moving in and out of your body, how that affects how you feel, and also whether you listen to those signals or not. So when it comes to interoception, it's not just a one-way street. So you're not just, the brain isn't there just sort of taking this information. It's also predicting what's likely happening and interpreting things. So there's this whole back and forth going on. And the experiment I did in Tulsa was about changing how difficult it was to breathe, to take a breath in. And breathing, like heart rate, is something that your brain never ignores. If it becomes difficult to breathe, your brain notices and wants to know about it. And so this experiment played with changing how difficult it was to breathe through a tube, and then also timed that with a beep. So I was learning to predict, based on what beep came before the breath, whether it's going to be a hard one or it's going to be an easy one. And over time, I learned that if they played a high-pitched beep, it was going to be a hard breath. If they played a low-pitched beep, it was going to be an easy breath. And so they did a few training things on that. And then they mixed it up without telling me. And the weird thing was that after I'd learned these associations, my brain was remarkably stubborn about So they played me a high-pitched tune and gave me a difficult breath. I didn't feel it, and vice versa. So based on what my brain was expecting, I sort of made it real in my body. So that's a really interesting thing, because you often think that, okay, you should always trust what your body is saying. You should always take this wisdom from within. Sometimes that doesn't really serve you. And in things like anxiety disorders and addictions and all kinds of mental health issues, sometimes the problem can be that when the body signal changes, the brain is stubborn and sticks to what it learned, perhaps because that was a safe thing to learn at the time. And so this sort of experiment is shedding light on things like PTSD and other problems where people's brains have got stuck in panic mode and don't learn that they are now safe. So that was kind of really interesting. And I didn't realize at the time, it's amazing how I was fooled, not just by the researchers, but by my own brain at the same time.
So interesting. But I suppose the joyful thing about the brain, not that I want to suggest it's easy, but that we have neuroplasticity. So the brain can be changed, and so too can our behaviour. The book is called Inner Sense: How the New Science of Introception Can Transform Your Health. The author is Caroline Williams. And Caroline, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Right, coming up after the break, performance nutritionist Daniel Davey on how everyone has it in them to live the life of an athlete.